This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
She has all these voices there. You know, if you notice this, listen to that. All these voices we didn't believe or expect that we had all that talent lurking there.
My hat is very large.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was saying about Wikipedia, you've got like this little group, these various cliques that work on there. And once they got a specific meme going, it's almost impossible to change because you can't lock it in. You can't go on there and say, this is the true version, before the bandits get in there and do their own thing.
You know, Gene, you and I have addressed this, I think, a few times in the past on the Paracast. And you know, I'm very glad that, Randall, you brought that up, because I spent a little time back in February out in California. And my day started off like a James Bond mission. I was up before the crack of dawn on a plane, you know, well before sunrise. I get out there 10 a.m. California time. Land in the airport, and I'm immediately contacted by the person who hired me to come out there to speak at this event, and said, you're to find Stanton Friedman and get him in the car with you, and you know, my contact will be there waiting for you in a large white vehicle, and we're going to drive you up into the mountains. And so it felt like a James Bond film. You know, I just dropped down in Los Angeles. I've got to find a famous nuclear physicist and UFO researcher. Anyway, all kidding aside, I found Stan. He and I were catching up and talking. He was talking about, for instance, some of the research he did at the National Archives that indicated a security clearance that had been held well into the career of Donald Menzel, one of the popular UFO skeptics of the era, which the era being the 50s and 60s. Even more interesting, there had been discussions via letters between Menzel and the man who would go on to become U.S. President, John F. Kennedy. And some of these not only discussed the interest in astronomy that Kennedy had, but Menzel also says, you know, in so many words to Kennedy that, you know, if you had the proper clearance, I might be able to discuss some of these things with you. So I went online to try and look up information about Donald Menzel. In the talk section on Wikipedia, you'll often find subjects that are being discussed for consideration for inclusion in the primary article, but often aren't. You'll never find anyone in the skeptic camps that are very interested in discussing the security clearances that Menzel had. Now, again, Stanton uses this as justification for the idea that the MJ-12 papers actually were legitimate. Whether or not that's the case, I find that not to be so much the point here. I went to the MJ-12 page, Majestic 12, on Wikipedia. There's very little. It's a very sparse article, and I had remembered at one point there being more. And so one thing about Wikipedia that's interesting is you can go back and look at the revision history of articles. And sadly, when it comes to these sorts of subjects, you'll find a lot more information by doing that because of these so-called guerrilla skeptics you're talking about. There was so much good information at one time on that page, and much of it was skeptical data about MJ-12, arguments against MJ-12. You'd think that this would be the kind of thing that skeptics would want, but not even that is good enough. They have to trim away all of that data as though they don't want the discussion to be had in the first place. It's got to be the short little sparse article. Oh, no, it's Wikipedia. We don't want woo-woo-kipedia. So they trim away all of this discussion, even some of the good skeptical data, and I find that atrocious. Why is it that not only can we not espouse skepticism and belief, we can't even have a full discussion? There is an issue here, and that is definitely something that's concerning. And I would say, well, and actually there are various sites that do just what I'm about to say. Forums.theparacast.com is one, but you could go start your own site. But again, the problem is that if we've already got an existing site with the kind of broad appeal and the reach of Wikipedia, why is it that certain subjects, again, seem to not only be controlled and moderated to the point of extreme bias, but that even relevant factual skeptical data has to be omitted as well? That just seems strange to me.
Well, I think part of the problem with Wikipedia is there's really no powerful governing body to edit this. It's all open source. Anybody can contribute stuff to it. There are basic minimum standards to verify, at least with a reference of some sort, what you post there. But there are no standards to be met. There's no governing body to set standards on accuracy, so anything can be there. We all use Wikipedia to look up stuff, but as a fact, of the matter is it doesn't mean you're getting much that's accurate.
Well, we'll say this, Dean. The Wikipedia Foundation, I get their emails. I donate periodically to Wikipedia because I do appreciate the information that they present and the service they provide. And I do that despite the fact that I happen to know that among the Wikipedia Foundation there, Jimmy Wales and many others have very openly expressed their attitudes about what they deem woo-woo subjects. They typically are most concerned about things like, you know, holistic medicine and these kinds of issues. But unfortunately, we see that same sort of biased attitude toward, again, even skeptical discussion of UFOs. Otherwise, this information wouldn't be trimmed and edited out of what could otherwise be very long, comprehensive articles. If we're trying to get information, the summation of human knowledge on this website, why do those subjects seem to be unfit for having a lengthy discussion while others, again, have pages that trail on forever? We want data, don't we? Well, let's put the data out there. Let's not dumb down the conversation and trim away all as though to edit those conversations out almost entirely. And that does seem to be what Wikipedia does at times.
Oh, definitely. And they do tolerate this guerrilla skeptics involvement in the Wikipedia, for sure. They allow it to take place without any kind of criticism. I know that at one point, something that I had put in had been taken out by a moderator, and I asked why. I had references and so on to books that had with the information, and just like I was supposed to, but because I put in my own profile that I was interested in UFOs, they deemed it to be biased. Okay, so does that mean that, okay, I'm a ufologist, and I write about ufology, and therefore I'm biased? Well, does that mean that a geologist who writes about geology is biased? So why can't the people who have the knowledge in the field contribute without being perceived as biased? And yet people who want to criticize it are deemed as not having a bias. There seems to be a double standard there.
Randall, if I may, I'll give one more brief example that's similar to what you just described. With my Brown Mountain Lights research, I was very interested in looking at what information was not only being discussed in the talk page, because rather than the primary article, I'll again drive home the point that sometimes you'll find better leads in the talk page and in the revision history where information has been edited out. I found on one occasion that there was an experiment, and I happen to know this experiment took place because I know one of the individuals from Oak Ridge Laboratories who had been involved, but there had been an experiment done with a extremely high candle power light, and they were trying to test the refraction theory at Brown Mountain, and they had managed to cause the appearance of large red illumination over the ridge by shining a large lamp in that direction. Anyway, long story short, one of the editors chose to remove that content from the primary article and said, I dread having to do this because I actually talked with one of the researchers who explained this experiment to me years ago, and I happen to know that it did occur, but since I can't find any reliable source, I won't include it. The reliable source that had been used previously and that was subsequently removed was one of the Science Frontiers links, which, of course, had been one of the websites that had presented to William R. Corliss's data over the years. This was considered unfit for inclusion as a link for source material on Wikipedia, despite the fact that the editor knew that the experiment in question had taken place. He'd met one of the experimenters.
That's ridiculous, is what that is.
It's absurd. That is as much a bias as you being a UFO researcher writing about UFOs. In your discussion about geologists writing about geology, do we not want geologists to write about the subject they understand the best for fear of bias leaking into a scientific article on Wikipedia? Sometimes knowledge is knowledge. And even if it's a position you don't agree with, we need to be in a position where we allow people who possess certain knowledge to discuss those subjects.
Well said. That's really the bottom line.
To play devil's advocate, though, I think ufology does have a problem where there isn't really a literature that you can go into and say, I want to see all the articles on Brown Mountain Lights from 1962 onward, or I want to see everything that people have written on this topic so that I can compare the different interpretations that have been put forth. There's no good way that I'm aware of to kind of build on a foundation of knowledge and continually refine it. And if there is, I'd like to know about it.
Well, that's a fair comment. Absolutely. That's what I try to do with my own website, and hence why I started the USI website, because nobody can mess with it. I can go in, I can find the best available evidence and references for the articles that are written there, and they're all reviewed, and if I see anything that's wrong with them or they're not substantiated well enough, then I say so. And some people have accused me of being too critical, even a debunker.
That's a good breaking point, guys. We've got Randall, we've got Sue, we've got guest co-host Micah Hanks. You're in
the Paracast.
The award-winning Graphic Converter 10, the universal genius for photo editing apps on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for the Swiss Army Knife app. It gives you all the features that you expect, and most important, it's easy to use. You can get it for just $39.95 from www.lemkesoft.com. That's www.lemkesoft.com. As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IBC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IBC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IBC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Do you know that good digestion is your body's first line of defense? Millions of Americans suffer from poor digestion. It shows up in the form of heartburn, acid reflux, GERD, irritable bowel syndrome, indigestion, constipation, diarrhea, and many other symptoms. Healthy digestion relies on armies of friendly bacteria. These good bugs keep bad bugs in check. Probimune, a new, uniquely developed probiotic, is scientifically proven to get to your gut and deliver the benefits of improved digestion. Probimune is an immune system booster and a digestive health enhancer. It's simple to use, and most importantly, you will feel Probimune working, soothing, and relaxing the gut. Get yours today by visiting younghealth.com or call 800-396-9024. Again, that's 800-396-9024. Use coupon code DIGEST to receive 15% off your first order.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com, and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
I think sometimes people think we're saying the Paracast.
Wait, we're not saying the Paracast? Oh,
well, now you're talking about someone named Polly. Asked for a cracker. I think that's where it all started.
All about parrot psychology.
I like it.
You see how that came to a dead stop?
Yeah.
Anyway, you were telling us, Randall, how you try to vet the stuff that's on your site. And we hope all of the people who do have sites about UFOs try to make an effort. Sometimes, of course, what they do is they're just happy to get traffic. And that's
actually
another problem.
I think he was actually telling us he was a debunker, or at least has been accused of being one.
Right, well, that's the point, too. Yeah, well, the point is here that you're trying to present a specific presentation on your site, and
well, like
trying to be fair about everything.
Yeah, like Sue says, you need to look at both sides of the issue. You need to do some cross-referencing. And before I write anything, that's what I do. And so, well, for example, there's the Sitgraves National Forest incident known as, well, the Travis Walton incident. And I've met many, many people who are completely convinced that that's a true story. And yet when you get looking into the actual background history, as much as you might not like someone like Philip Klass, he did dig up some information on the backgrounds of Walton and made some pretty good points as to, well, really, why should we believe this person's story? And I don't want to go into it in detail.
Randall, why don't we cover some of it? We had Travis Walton on the Paracast months and months ago, one time only. So looking at both sides here, those who favor him and the skeptical point of view, you sound like you have concerns about him. What are they?
I think anyone should have concerns. And let's just briefly say that the word debunk, there's nothing really wrong with that. If you can debunk something legitimately, you should. If there is a truth to be told and a truth to be found, we should find it and it should be put out there. Debunkers have uncovered serious credibility flaws in Walton and his story. He did pass two polygraph tests, but it was discovered that there was a previous test from which the polygraph examiner concluded that Walton was attempting to perpetrate a hoax. You don't hear about that. It was discovered that the questions used in the later test had to be approved by Walton himself before the test could be administered. You don't hear about that.
That's actually standard lie detector protocol, though, to agree on the questions. But sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack you. Please continue.
I'm not a polygraph expert, but I have had a polygraph myself, actually, and that was not my experience with it, but maybe it might depend on what location or who's doing the tests.
True, yeah.
He was on a television show with the truth, something about truth or consequence type of thing, where he took a polygraph and failed it. QFOS, Ground Saucer Watch, in cooperation with them, concluded that there was no corroborating evidence that Walton had boarded a UFO. And then it gets into other issues about he tried to gain media exposure but was turned down by the radio station. He'd actually been caught, pled guilty, forging payroll checks. This is Walton, yes.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so, I mean, this is actually something that you can look up and you can find factually. So, yeah, it was a moment of truth in which he was asked on whether or not he was on a UFO, and he said yes, and it was scored false. But and then they say, well, there was no money involved, but he and his crew stood to gain up to $100,000 for submitting their story to National Enquirer. And, I mean, this just sort of kind of goes on and on and on. I mean, if somebody came up to you, you know, after stealing your checkbook and attempting to cash checks and then said, well, hey, I saw a UFO. Would you give me the, can you please give me the prize for it? Or how many people are going to be inclined to believe it? Now, this could be a case of maybe, boy cried wolf type of thing, or just, but unreliable people can still have genuine experiences, but it really does cast a pall of unreliability on the story that a lot of people aren't aware of.
Now, my understanding was that Walton had taken more than one lie detector test, and the results varied. But even then, a lie detector is not 100% accurate or even close. On the other hand, if you see evidence of possible deception, that has to be an area of concern.
Oh, definitely. And when you look at what it just boils down to is his credibility.
Well, here you have to take him at faith, because he may have disappeared for several days, but nobody knows what he did during that period. And by saying, I don't remember, that kind of closes down the discussion.
Yeah, I think that's the problem here is that there's so much material to go through. And when I took a look, I read the book Walton wrote, and I listened to him on a bunch of interviews, and I kind of looked at everything, and I really didn't find him incredible. And I had taken some courses in lie detector and interrogation stuff, so that stuff caught my attention especially. But I can see how people would come to different conclusions about this, given the nature of what he said happened. But I think for people who aren't into UFOs, they're not going to want to take the time to sift through all this stuff. And that might be why you see a lot of people just kind of writing off UFOs altogether, because there's massive amounts of materials and counterclaims and competing claims to go through, even to come to the conclusion that you just don't know what happened.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I tried to keep the articles on the site fairly short and have sifted through all of that in the first place to sort of show, okay, well, there's this, and then there's that, and then there's this, and then there's that. And when you're looking at the sort of franchise that Walton has on the Fire in the Sky thing and his presence out there in the UFO community and the number of people who see that and not the other side of it, then you've got a large group of people who are believers compared to just a few who bother to dig into it and see the other side of it. So that's why I've been accused of being a debunker. I'm not making a judgment call. I don't know. Maybe this did happen to him. Maybe it didn't. But I think people should know about the other side of things definitely before they make up their mind about what they believe.
I think that, by the way, Randall, that should be the case with virtually anything. I often call myself a skeptic, and many people say, well, Mikey, you know, you're not a skeptic in the sense of, like, modern skepticism, and proudly I will retort that people who make that assertion are correct. Modern skeptics, and again, Marcelo Truzzi had, and I want to come back around to Travis here in a moment because I want to weigh in on that for just a moment as well, but I will say that there have been many people over the years who have been skeptical, but who feel that there are many in the modern skeptic movement that are, rather than being skeptical, are essentially playing to their predispositions toward belief in disbelief, or, you know, playing off of their own biased perspective that, well, if all, you know, if 99% of all UFOs can be explained, then why not 100%? Truzzi had left PSYCOP just after its founding. He was one of the early members, and he left very shortly thereafter because he said that it was clear to me that rather than having a honest skeptical debate, many who were on, and Class being, I think, one of the people he was discussing, many had already made up their minds what they believed and were not following through in a unbiased way. They were trying to fulfill their expectations based on their bias.
Now let's break.
Sure.
We'll continue with that with Micah Hanks and Sue and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
There is an affordable alternative to the high cost of healthcare that offers freedom from insurance while providing compliance with the Obamacare individual mandate. Imagine having access to quality, affordable healthcare that allows you the freedom to choose your doctor and hospital. Members can share up to 100% of necessary medical expenses, including some alternative treatments. Find out how you and your family can contain healthcare costs without giving up your freedom. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Injury Help Desk is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention, prescription antibiotic drug users. Have you or a loved one suffered an aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, or abdominal aortic aneurysm after taking the prescription antibiotic drugs Levaquin or Avalox? These popular antibiotic drugs have been prescribed more than 80 million times since 2004, and medical studies show an increased risk of the following injuries. Aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, and abdominal aortic aneurysm. If you or a loved one used the prescription antibiotic drugs Levaquin or Evalox and suffered from aortic dissection, aortic aneurysm, or abdominal aortic aneurysm, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. You may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-823-3851. 800-823-3851. 800-823-3851.
Did you know that a dirty CPAP system can make you sick? If you knew what could be growing in your mask and hose, you might not sleep so well. But now, SoClean.com has released the world's first and only automated CPAP cleaner and sanitizer. It kills 99.9% of all CPAP germs, and it's completely hands-free. For a limited time, you can try SoClean risk-free for 30 days. Just call 1-800-952-2797.
SoClean changed the CPAP experience for the better. My health has improved. It's simple to use, and I'm not worried about infections.
SoClean destroys CPAP bacteria, viruses, and germs, and it eliminates the daily hassle of washing your system by hand. There's no water, chemicals, or disassembly. Just pop in your mask, close the lid, and presto! Your CPAP system is clean and fresh in minutes. Call SoClean.com to try it risk-free at home for 30 days. This is a limited-time offer, only available by calling 1-800-952-2797. That's 1-800-952-2797.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
You were saying, co-host Micah Hanks.
Well, I was just kind of outlining again that, as Randall had said in the last segment, we all need to be skeptical about all things. And again, I think that you can be skeptical without being predisposed toward debunking every extraordinary claim. I had cited Marcello Truzzi as being an individual who, throughout his life, had said, well, sometimes, and he had initially wanted this for the Psycop Journal, which I guess really I kind of became skeptical inquirer. He said he wanted there to be a journal that could at least look at some claims as being extraordinary, but when there wasn't enough evidence to dismiss them outright, that we could leave open the possibility that there was a verifiable phenomena, nonetheless. And he found that many of his fellow Psycop members were unwilling to bend on that, and that all claims had to take a dismissive skeptical attitude. I do think that that highlights too much skeptic bias among modern skeptics. And so in terms of being truly skeptical, as I like to say that I am, I try to ask hard questions. I'm seeing a lot of that from Randall and Sue, too, that they're willing to ask hard questions about a phenomena, whether it be UFOs or whatever else, that we can also be willing to accept there may be enough to discuss apart from those instances that we have to be doubtful about. Now, coming back to Travis Walton for a second, the one time I was compared to Philip J. Klass was when I wrote an article years ago for UFO Magazine talking about similarities between the description of the craft that Walton had seen and various plasma formations akin to ball lightning. It seems obvious to me now why I would have written that, because of my long-held interest in the Brown Mountain Lights. Unfortunately, Philip Klass had also proposed that many UFOs could be explained through various plasmas, and hence people had said, you know, you're just as bad as Philip J. Klass. How dare you cast any doubt on Travis Walton? Well, I've got to say, I've met Travis on numerous occasions. I've had dinner with him. We've sat down and had coffee together. Very seldom when we're together do we talk about UFOs. Interestingly, we are usually talking about other things. And I actually like him a lot. I have had no reason to particularly doubt that he had had some experience. And that is, by the way, with full knowledge of Klass and others' investigations and the various red flags that have been raised. You know, one thing I'll point out, for instance, is that Travis had apparently had a a pact with his brother that if they ever had an opportunity to see a UFO, they'd get as close to it as possible. And some have looked at that as being much like they looked at the famous disappearance of Frederick Valentich as being, well, he already had an interest in UFOs prior to this alleged experience. That, to me, doesn't necessarily mean that nothing actually happened. So, again, I'm not trying to necessarily bolster Travis's claims. What I do know is that there are some interesting points about his experiences that he says have happened to him. There are some questions that have been raised by class and others over the years. I think it's fair to ask those questions, but by the same token, knowing Travis, I find him to be an interesting person. I find him to be a person who seems credible. I've never gotten the impression that he was just in this just trying to make money. But, yeah, he's written a book, and he tries to sell books. And, again, I'd come back to that same argument. Are there better ways that someone could, you know, make a career selling books? Are there better things someone could write about and promote if they really were just in this trying to make money? So maybe that could be said about Travis as well. Who knows? I like him. I find him to be a nice person. And I nonetheless will say that it's fair to ask hard questions about any UFO claim. And that's not an attack against him any more than it is an endorsement. It's just that it is fair to ask those kind of questions. And if we're really going to be honest as researchers, those kind of questions have to be asked. That said, I do think that there are certain researchers these days that, based on their pet theories about UFOs or based on their relationships with certain individuals in the community, they become so beholden to upholding a person or a cause that they become almost evangelical about their involvement. And I think that that's kind of a problem, because when you become evangelical and you have to fight for a cause and you have to maintain your position and hold your ground, even if there appears to be evidence to the contrary that surfaces much later, that, I think, is in its own way just as dangerous as the kind of extreme bias that we find among the quote-unquote guerrilla skeptics today. So we have to be skeptical. We have to be able to have a fair and very balanced argument, and we also have to have a discussion, and we have to also be able to change our views in lieu of new evidence.
Here, here.
There, there.
Where, where?
Who, who?
Oh, you're talking about me again. Oh.
I'll just tell you very briefly, I'm on the fence about Travis Walton. He seemed like a nice enough guy. He seemed sincere enough, but he's been telling the story for decades. So after you've rehearsed the story for decades, you can sound quite sincere. But it also stands alone by being someone who just disappears somewhere and comes back and says, well, I guess I was aboard a UFO.
Right. And, well, I mean, there have been some people who say they even know where he was during that time period, and it wasn't on a UFO. And, of course, you can say, well, you know, he didn't stand to make much money at it, but the Inquirer did pay them all $5,000 at the time and probably had them sign some piece of paper declaring it was true. And Fire in the Sky did go on to gross $19 million, nearly $20 million. Then they released it on VHS, and now it's being released again on DVD, and he's talking about yet another new movie, a remake. The book itself has been re-released, and he's still out doing conferences and stuff where he gets paid. So, I mean, sure, maybe he hasn't made millions at it, but over a number of years, it's turned out to be a pretty good little franchise.
Well, certainly, he was a total unknown before this happened. So he writes a book, he gets public appearances, paid lectures. He also has been running a UFO conference. Now, right. That is not necessarily a big money maker, but look, it's giving somebody who otherwise would just be another guy not 15 minutes of fame, maybe 30 or 45 minutes.
Well, we're looking at 40 years something now.
Right. And I have to think here, over 40 years.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many copies of that book he sold, but it could be a fairly steady seller. I don't know. But it provides something for him other than his normal stuff, which would make him a pretty unknown person.
Sure. And, you know, all the best con men are likable. So, I mean, sure, he might be a perfectly likable guy. And I don't think he should necessarily be held accountable to his personality today for something he did a long time ago back in the mid-70s. You know, I don't like to bring that part of it up, but you have to look at this in terms of the climate of the times and what happened at the time, because that's where it all began. You can't say, well, that never happened because he's a nice guy now. The whole thing is one long chain of events that really has a questionable foundation in my mind, and yet still could be true. I mean, you know, it could have been a bunch of guys in a chain gang, and it could still be have been a real UFO. I mean, we don't know.
That it could have been a UFO. It could have been something related to what he claims he experienced, and then he embellished it over the years, or embellished it at the time to give, maybe he hoped, more credibility to what happened.
If we're really lucky, maybe someone will turn up a couple of slides, and then we'll know for sure.
Never happen, yes. So there's always a slide in an attic. That's the solution right there. Let's look at every attic in the world and see if there are slides there, especially those showing visits to museums.
Oh, man. Well,
you know, I mean, okay, let me just put this out there, too. As far as photos that we hope will eventually turn up, you know, one of the issues I have is that there have been a few people over the years also who have said that they do have some pretty good evidence of UFOs, but they don't seem forthcoming with that evidence. Ray Stanford has said for years that he's got a photograph of whatever apparently showed up down there that Lonnie Zamora saw, the famous Lonnie Zamora incident, or the Socorro, right, Socorro UFO, I guess. Again, all these incidents have different names, but I'm talking about the Lonnie Zamora encounter. But, you know, it troubles me when there are people who, saying I'm not attacking Ray either. I'm just saying if we've got good data, if we've got any kind of evidence, photographic or otherwise, and it's purportedly known to exist, why is that kept from public view? I do sort of hope that maybe at some point that a slide will turn up, a video, a piece of metallic debris or something that will at least lend some sort of physical evidence. I've been presented with purported physical evidence like this in the past. One notable experience involving a metallic object that I don't think really is best discussed as being representative of any kind of UFO slag or anything like that. George Wingfield, a former guest on this program, the British researcher, friend of mine, and he certainly has expressed skeptical views about this particular artifact. And there are a lot of, you know, things like that over the years that have been touted as possible evidence of a UFO.
Let's break it there and we'll continue. One more segment with Micah Hanks and Ufology. Anna Sue, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with Principal Austin Hughes attests as the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
This is an alert. If your business or church is building this year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. A General Steel building can save you as much as half the cost and time of similar conventional construction. And we're offering rebates of up to $20,000 to help you build today. Call General Steel for free information that could save you thousands. Call 866-91-STEEL.
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 This is a healthcare alert from the Pain Relief Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You don't have to suffer any longer. You can immediately qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you by calling our 24/7 pain relief hotline at 866-389-0620. Delivery is free and all paperwork is handled for you. If you are on Medicare and have knee, back, shoulder, or ankle pain, don't wait. You can qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost by calling our 24/7 pain hotline now at 866-389-0620. Our representatives are standing by 24/7 to take your call and rush you your pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you. Shipping is free and all paperwork is handled for you. Just call 866-389-0620. That's 866-389-0620. Again, 866-389-0620.
As a doctor, I see patients every day who are losing their vision to age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. If you have blurry vision or blind spots, they can be symptoms of AMD, and if untreated, could lead to blindness. The good news? AMD can be managed with effective clinically approved treatments that may reverse some vision loss. For free AMD information, contact the Foundation Fighting Blindness at 1-800-BLINDNESS. That's 1-800-BLINDNESS. There is a cure in sight.
Hi, this is Joshua P. Warren, author of The Poor Man's Paranormal, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So you were telling us about possible physical evidence, Micah Hanks.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Well, I'm really asking, is there good evidence? You know, again, we hear stories about things. Now, I have a few friends who have visited with Ray Stanford and who have said that they've seen a photo that purports to show an object similar to that which Lonnie Zamora described seeing. This is one of the classic UFO incidents, of course. This was one that J. Allen Hynek had also investigated during his time with Blue Book. Remains, I think, one of the more fascinating UFO encounters of all time. And I know that Ray Stanford feels at times that he has been treated badly by other researchers and is therefore resistant to the idea of releasing this photo that he says he has. So I don't doubt that he has it, but I am troubled by the idea that there are all these instances where there is allegedly debris or slag or photos or anything that might offer some credible, tangible evidence of a UFO. And then you got guys like David Marler today, who I've spoken with, and he says, Micah, these days a photo isn't good enough. I mean, no photo in this age of digital manipulation will offer good proof of a UFO. Question, really, if that's true, and I can't say that I disagree with him. I mean, how can we find an avenue for producing good evidence of a UFO? What will it take to bring physical proof into the equation here? What, or any kind of good evidence for that matter? What do we have in this day and age to be able to prove to people, hey, there is some sort of tangibility to this phenomenon?
Well, that hinges, like Ruppelt said, it hinges on the word proof. What is proof? And when asked that, a lot of people sort of glaze over. They become a little confused. But really, it's quite simple. Proof is simply evidence that's sufficient to justify the belief in a claim. Now, some people are going to find some evidence enough, and other people are going to require more evidence, and other people are going to have very, very strict scientific standards. Proof for one person isn't the same as proof for another person. So at some point we have to ask, well, what's reasonable? If 100,000 people say that they've had this experience, then is that reasonable enough to say that something is going on? Are we being visited by some sort of alien craft? And I think it is. I don't think we need hard material physical evidence to be confident that we're being visited by alien craft. Beyond that, I don't know where they're coming from, like we've talked about before, but I think it's pretty much unreasonable to say it's not happening.
I would agree. And Randall, quickly to that point, I'll also say, I often cite John Napier, who is a primatologist with the Smithsonian, wrote a great book about Bigfoot back in the 1970s. I cite him in this discussion, unrelated to that subject of cryptozoology may seem, because as a researcher, he was largely considered and recognized as, and his writings show this, he was very skeptical of the subject he wrote about. Nonetheless, he also said, if we are to discuss something like Bigfoot, which exists apart from consensus opinions in modern science, we have to, from time to time, step into what he called the goblin universe, and we have to be willing to discuss it on those terms. And so again, I think to discuss a subject like UFOs, for instance, is not, nor it should be misconstrued as being a fantastic belief in some fantastic possibility for which there's no evidence. I think that we sometimes have to state very clearly that, as you've pointed out, Randall, and this mirrors things that Sue has said over the course of the conversation too, we really sometimes need to recognize that despite there being that lack of proof that would, you know, satisfy a physicist, a chemist, something along those lines, that there is enough anecdotal data to substantiate a phenomena does seem to exist, and there's observational data that should be considered. And now we can step into that realm, I call it the goblin universe if you want, but let's say we have to deal with this subject sometimes on its own terms, which is pre-scientific, sort of. And perhaps the furtherance of our knowledge in that realm will allow for, at some point, a broader scientific discussion to be had. So yes, I think that it does outline that there are different kinds of evidence and different things that mean different things to different people from different ideological and intellectual perspectives.
I like to say that I apply the principles of critical thinking to the theory and to the phenomena itself. So there's the scientific method, and then there's critical thinking. And both are academically acceptable forms of analyzing a problem. Both can yield reasonable conclusions about what may or may not be taking place. When we talk about anecdotal evidence, it's not totally unscientific. The stimulus response, for example, in terms of when we see something, how our eye responds is well known. It's how we're able to make prescriptions for glasses and so on. Chances are, if someone sees something, there is some external phenomenon that has caused light to enter a person's eye and show up as an image on the back and be translated into image within our consciousness. That's well understood. For hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people to see these things and describe them and to think that it's all simply hallucinations is just not reasonable. So it's not like there's no science involved. There really is science involved. Human beings are fantastic recorders of information and perceivers of the world around us. Only recently have cameras and such been able to adapt to the lighting conditions in a dynamic fashion to be able to observe things that are moving quickly through dim and light areas and determine what they are with an intelligence. For that matter, there isn't even anything that's intelligent or as intelligent as we are to be able to do that that's hooked up to any kind of sensing mechanism. It's really a mistake, in my view, to think that people's personal experiences should be written off as unreliable enough to discount the entire phenomena.
Well, the issue you can argue about here is, yes, they see something. What did they see? And is what they see representative of what the phenomenon is? And that's where we get into all these ephemeral aspects and paranormal aspects. That it's a physical aircraft capable of feats of maneuverability that appear to exceed what we can do. Well, you could say, well, some advanced civilization did that. It may not be a secret test aircraft here, although I suspect that was a possible source of a lot of UFOs over the years. Then this is where the expectation or belief in ET comes from. At the other side of the coin, well, if we're not seeing what's there, but only seeing our interpretation of what's there because there are aspects that just are too alien to us or just beyond our understanding. I don't know. I wouldn't pretend to know. So if we presume to want to discuss this on the show, we could start another episode or maybe continue this and after the PowerCast we can see. This has been a fun session with Micah Hanks and Ufology and Sue, and it's something that we put together on fairly short notice. It's nice to see how you guys just are set loose in the world and you produce magic. It was a fun episode indeed.
Well, it was great.
Randall, would you tell our listeners about your organization and how they can participate?
Well, thanks a lot for the opportunity to be here, Gene, again. If anyone is interested in participating or just supporting the cause, it's free membership, no dues, lifetime, forever. There's no commitment or work required if you're not interested, but any volunteering would be welcome. Just go to ufopages.com and you can check out the website there. You'll need a full-featured computer. It doesn't work very well on browsers that are on phones and such, but on a full-featured computer, it's a great website, so check it out.
Sue, I presume you have nothing to sell and no site.
No, I'm just floating around there and on the cloud somewhere.
Oh, that's more fun. She's got wings, by the way. She's Hawk Girl or something, or Hawk Woman. I forget the character. Micah Hanks, tell us briefly how they can get in touch with the things you do.
Absolutely. Of course, there's always my website, MicahHanks.com. Some podcast listeners have expressed confusion because they don't find the shows there. That's because the Graylian Report is my podcast, which is at Graylian, G-R-A-L-I-E-N, report.com. You can find that on iTunes, as well as the other show I do, Middle Theory, which is at middletheory.com. My email, you may reach out to me at any time, info@MicahHanks.com. And that goes for you, Sue, and for you, Randall, too. I hope to hear from you guys. Let's stay in touch. Randall, I want to learn more about your organization, maybe help out.
Let's continue here and tell you all that we can be found on Twitter. Look for The Paracast. The Paracast is on Twitter. There are two Paracast fan clubs on Facebook. One's a group, one's a community, and the difference is obvious to some people, not to me, but we'll keep it as it is. We also have a second radio show called After the Paracast, which is the featured presentation of the Paracast Plus at plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. We offer a commercial-free version of this show, a limited number of show transcripts. We've added some classic episodes, and more are coming. We expect to have more videos from Chris O'Brien in the very near future. Lots of really good stuff. Plus.theparacast.com. A low subscription rate to sign up and become a member. I'm going to say this all in sequence, and then Micah Hanks, Sue, Ufology, thanks for joining us on the Paracast.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks, Gene.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
So you've got to take a state construction license exam or certification. Can't decide on what books or what chapters to study? Discover right now how you can eliminate unnecessary books and wasted study time. At ContractorExam.com, our study materials zero in on state-required test topics in an effective, multiple-choice format. So whether you're a plumber, electrician, general contractor, or other construction-related trade, ContractorExam.com will help get you prepared. Visit us at www.ContractorExam.com today.
If you missed buying emergency food from the Patriotic Guys during their mega sale last month, be grateful. Even when they slashed their prices by 40%, you still get more food for your money from Ready Supply Foods. Ready Supply Foods sells 50 to 230% more food for your money, and we can prove it. With 23 delicious entrees, we also have four times the variety, too. Surviving a disaster is hard enough without worrying about starving to death. See how much more food you can get for your money at ReadySupplyFoods.com today.